For the last couple of years, we have done a ritual on the first Sunday of the year where we draw a star word, a word to guide our coming year. If you've been here for that, you may remember that although you are always welcome to exchange your word, if you really don't like it, I encourage you to trust the word that you draw. It might not mean anything at that moment, but its meaning may unfold over the course of the year. Well, this year, after you all had drawn your words, I reached into the bowl and I drew the word gratitude. I instantly wanted to put it back and get a new one. I almost did, but you know, I had just said that we should trust the word that we drew, and so after the service, I sat with the word, and I felt really grumpy about the word gratitude, and I almost exchanged it again downstairs in the privacy of my office. But then I thought, if I feel this grumpy about the word gratitude, it is clearly the word that I need. I told a friend about this, and she suggested that I keep a gratitude journal, assuring me that after a while of faithfully keeping a journal every day, I would come to love gratitude. So for 6 months, I dutifully wrote down three things that I was grateful for at the end of every day. I'm not going to tell you how many times coffee was on that list. At the end of 6 months, just like she said, no, just kidding. At the end of 6 months, I still felt grumpy about keeping a gratitude journal, so I quit. I have since tried to interrogate why this word irritates me so much. I think it's gratitude lists or journals or the suggestion that focusing on gratitude might make my anxiety or fear or pain or troubles disappear. It might be the forced thank yous that we make our kids say or obligatory thank you cards. I really meant it if I ever sent you a thank you card. It was sincere, I promise. Even deeper, I guess, it might be that the endless praise songs and thank you lords that I have been forced to sing or pray over the course of my life, usually at times when I felt anything but thankful to God. Gratitude might be a key attitude for happiness or joy, but I think only when it arises authentically. The thing is, I'm actually a very grateful person. I express thanks and gratitude freely and sincerely quite often. I mean it. If you got a card from me, that was sincere. I frequently tell y'all how much I appreciate you and how much I love being the pastor of this church. I love to let people know how much they mean to me and share appreciation for who they are or the things that they have done or said. It doesn't feel like gratitude. It just feels like a natural expression of love to me. But I don't even think about it as something separate from love. I listened this week to an episode of On Being with David Stendel Rast, whose words are our contemporary reading. He is a Benedictine monk who gained notoriety for his work writing about gratitude. In the interview with Krista Tippett, he says something about how gratitude is inextricably tied to belonging. That phrase, inextricably tied to belonging, struck a chord with me. I feel that right here. And that is a gratitude that resonates with me deeply. Stendel Rast writes that our greatest human longing is the longing to belong. Belong to one another, belong to the earth, belong to God. Gratitude is an expression of that belonging. It is both an invitation to belonging and an expression of thanksgiving for the belonging that already is. When people ask Stendel Rast if you can be grateful for everything, like the kids, they probably can't be grateful for everything at this point. He says, you can't be grateful for war or violence or sickness, things like that. So the key when people ask, can you be grateful for everything? He says, no, not for everything, but in every moment. When gratefulness is an expression of belonging, you can be grateful in every moment because in every moment we do belong. In every moment we belong to God. I feel deeply grateful for that. Now I want to admit something a little cringy here. in high school and college, during my pseudo evangelical days, I loved verse in our that we read today, Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I had this verse taped on a slip of paper to my trumpet. I had another slip taped to my lacrosse stick. I had it written in notebooks and book covers. It was my verse, I suppose. A little cringy now. I told you, but I don't think that I understood much about the context in which this verse was written. It certainly wasn't about good luck in a lacrosse game or calming one's nerves during a musical performance, because Paul was in prison when he wrote this letter to the church in Philippi. He would soon be heading to his death, and he was already aware of that reality. His assertion that he could do all things through Christ included persecution, imprisonment, and even death. It was not just an uplifting verse to hang up on one's wall or tape to one's lacrosse stick. That said, Philippians is a letter that is filled with expressions of gratitude and a deep sense of mutual belonging between Paul and the church. Paul had a gentle, kind of special relationship with this particular church. And all throughout the letter, it is warm and affectionate, even kind of sweet at times. I left verse 14 in our reading because I just love it. He says, in any case, it was kind of you to share in my distress. Isn't that just so sweet and human and tender and not what we usually think about Paul? He clearly loves this church. Now, this church seems to have several women in leadership. Again, not what we're led to believe about Paul. Paul calls them his co-workers in sharing the gospel. He treats them as equal spiritual leaders and is writing to encourage them in their work. It does seem, though, that this church is struggling. Paul references some division amongst the members and acknowledges that some false teachers have tried to steer the church in the wrong direction. Like most of Paul's churches at the time, in addition to the internal pressures they were facing, they faced persecution from many outside forces. Out of context, this context of struggle, Paul's words, rejoice in God always, can fall flat, feel unrealistic, or maybe even a little Pollyanna-ish. But they come from someone, remember, someone in prison and facing death, and are written to people who are struggling, who are intimately familiar with the harsh reality of human existence. Paul doesn't gloss over those hardships that they are facing. Instead, his words are meant to encourage the church, affirming that God is near, even amid the pain and persecution they are all facing. When he tells them to rejoice in God always, he is pointing to a joy that is not only enduring, but one that sustains us even when we are worn down by life's challenges. That kind of joy is rooted in belonging, rooted in the relationship, and built on deep trust. It is a joy that is able to negotiate even moments of joylessness. That joy is an expression of deep gratitude for their belonging to one another and their belonging to God. Now, Paul isn't saying that our worries are unimportant, rather that they should be put in the context of that relationship with God. We are invited in everything or in every moment, the joys and concerns of life, to make ourselves known to God, to one another, and to ourselves. And it's there, in that place of our greatest vulnerability, that we find joy and gratitude, and the peace of God which passes all understanding. Thanks be to God for that. I started this series on imagining together with a story about Jake and imagination, so let me close it out now with one about Ella, with her permission, of course. When Ella was little, from like 2 to 4 or so, she had an imaginary friend named Sholly. Sholly came with us everywhere. The year that Ella was 2.5, we spent Thanksgiving at the beach on Oak Island, just the three of us and Sholly. Sholly kept Ella entertained and occupied most of the time. Any parent of a 2-year-old will tell you what a gift it is to have your 2-year-old play independently. One afternoon, we brought a kid's tent down to the beach. Sholly and Ella played in the tent for an hour while Bones and I fished in the surf. It was lovely. Sholly was such a great friend to Ella for all those years, until one day Ella let us know that Sholly had moved to Ohio. And that was that was the last we ever heard of Sholly. I hope she's okay in Ohio right now. We loved Sholly, and mostly Sholly was a good friend to Ella, mostly. But once, Ella came up to me, upset, crying, and she said, "Mommy, Sholly's being mean to me." I was flummoxed. I didn't know how to respond to that. All I could come up with, "She's your imaginary friend. Imagine her being nice to you." I wonder if sometimes God looks at the mess that we have made of this world, the wars and violence and pain and suffering, and is even more flummoxed than I was. Like, I gave you this incredible capacity for creativity and reasoning and compassion. Can't you imagine a better way to live together? I had coffee with Rabbi Tom from Congregation Beth Israel this week, and he shared this quote from Krista Tippett with me. In it, she's talking about her experience of living in Berlin in the 80s. Krista says, "To be alive in those years was to experience the unraveling of civilizational tangles and traumas that had felt like the shape of forever. No one saw the demise of the wall coming, even amidst unprecedented chaos, risk, daring, and danger. I was deeply imprinted by the clarity I felt afterwards that there is more happening at any given moment that we do not see, and more change possible than we can begin to imagine. Our imaginations, this powerful capacity we humans have to literally summon new realities into being, did not reach far enough for what was within our grasp. Our ability to imagine new realities in the beginning into being." Now, I don't want to oversimplify things here and suggest that gratitude will solve all our problems in the world. Obviously it won't, at least not on its own. Certainly my own experience of trying to force myself into gratitude didn't work. But I do think that, as Krista Tippett suggests, some of our problems are a failure of imagination, mostly a failure of being able to imagine that we belong to one another, that what harms one person harms all of us, that what harms the planet harms all of us. As King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So if gratitude can help us tune into the reality that we are all connected, that we all belong to one another, that we all belong to God, then maybe from that place we can begin to imagine a better world. I am deeply grateful for this church. I mean that. That gratefulness inspires my imagination as I think about what we can do and be together in the coming years, the ways that we can foster a sense of belonging here, the ways that we can care for and support our community, the ways we can advocate for justice and mercy in this world. We know that we are likely facing a time of hardship. The next few years may bring many challenges and trials, but I believe we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. Strengthens us in belonging, strengthens us in joy, strengthens us in gratitude. Stendhal Ross says we can't be grateful for everything, but we can be grateful in every moment. Paul tells us, rejoice in God always. Imagine what this world could be if we all lived out of a sense of gratitude for that foundational truth of belonging. No matter what the future brings, we belong to this earth, we belong to one another, we belong to God. I am grateful. Thanks be to God.